Everybody, welcome to the Atheist Experience. We are live. Today is Sunday, June 21st, 2020. It is Father's Day, at least in the United States, and I think Canada, maybe. I don't know. Is that a different day in Canada?
No, it's Father's Day today. You're right.
Yeah, are you sure? Because, I mean, you're barely in Canada. You're like somewhere in the Great White North.
Firmly in Canada. I'm in Nova Scotia. I am firmly, squarely in Canada.
All right. My Canadian friends want to sometimes exclude Nova Scotia and, you know,
send them my way. We'll have a chat.
As you heard, joining me this week for the first time on the Atheist Experience proper, this was supposed to be happening alongside Faithless Forum. And when Faithless Forum unfortunately had to be canceled due to COVID, the first thing that I made sure we did was to say, hey, no, we're not canceling this. So please welcome my friend Shani Q.
Hi, guys. I'm sad I'm not in the studio with you guys. I should be in Texas right now hanging out. But
yes.
I know. It's not fair, I'm really excited.
You get two excuses because you get to do the show from remote at home. And then when all this is over and everybody comes down here to Austin anyway, you get to do it again.
Yeah. Like if you think I'm not going to raid the ACA and just make you guys platform me, you're crazy. I can be very persuasive.
You don't have to be persuasive. If you lived in Austin, I would have already just put you on the show.
Aw,
it's awesome.
It would be fun. I'm excited.
So as a reminder, we are live from Austin, Texas, and from Nova Scotia. The call-in number is 512-991-9242. And we've gotten rid of the toll-free number because it only applied to U.S. and Canada. And what we now have is the ability for people to call in from their PC and other devices, potentially, by going to tiny.cc/callaxp. It's right there at the bottom of the screen in the lower third right now. tiny.cc/callaxp. That works the same way the call the show button used to work. And by the way, the call the show button is evidently working as well. Quick notes, as we've done for the past few weeks, we are a 501c3 nonprofit educational corporation encouraging popular atheism and the separation of religion and government. And on this page, if you are watching the YouTube stream live right now, if you look directly, I was right the first time. It's right up there above the chat. You can click a donate button. And unlike super chats and unlike other things, because we're a nonprofit organization, absolutely 100% of the donations that you make there go directly to the Atheist Community of Austin. And just as a reminder, I don't get paid to do this. Shanna's not getting paid to do this. This is a largely volunteer-run organization, and so your efforts are incredibly important to keep the ACA and the mission running, even when the building's closed. And it sucks that the building is closed. By way of an update, I'd like to remind everybody that the mayor of Austin has extended the stay-at-home work-safe order until August 15th. So there's at least roughly 60 more days of me being stuck at home and us not being in the building. And we will probably keep the building closed even after they start opening it up until we're going to follow the best guidelines of what the mayor and the city are recommending alongside with health experts, CDC, et cetera. So luckily we have, not only can you donate, but there's merchandise that you can buy. And there's a membership link that you can click on the YouTube channel as well. But we have one of the finest crews you're ever going to find anywhere on the planet for any show, because we have volunteers who are taking your calls, screening that, trying to figure out, you know, hey, can we get more theists on the call? Is this call already covered by two or three other people? We have somebody, you know, Vern's cat does the audio, and Vern babies that cat very well, making sure that the audio is pristine. And, you know, Greg's there doing the video stuff. I'm so proud and happy that everyone involved in this show just said, you know what? Okay, we're stuck at home. Let's still make the show happen and make it work almost as good, and in some ways maybe slightly better than it did in the studio. We've learned some lessons about how and what we can do. As a reminder to people calling in, cell phones are terrible at full duplex. If you're on a landline, it may not even be all that much better. We are going to make judicious use of the hold button so that we don't wind up spinning the whole time talking over each other. This is a show where we want to know what you believe and why, And more importantly, the why is the more important of the two, but even more important is that than that is why should anybody else believe you? Mm-hmm. If you believe, let's say you were abducted by aliens and it's because you have compelling evidence to you, if nobody else has access to that evidence, or should they just take your word for it and accept that this is the case, would you do that as well? And so that's kind of what the conversations are about. But I have a sneaking suspicion that we're going to get into some wild stuff.
Yeah, me too. I was looking through. I'm not sure if I'm terrified or excited or both. Maybe both.
I tell you what, Shannon, you're also doing the line tonight after your experience is over. Yeah, and we've done that show together. So this is the first time we've done a show together. It's just the first time we've done this show.
Yes, that's right. It's the first time we've done this show. We've done the line together. And that was fun. We did a show on the soul. And we had some great conversations.
This is step one to Shannon taking over.
Shh, don't tell anybody my plans.
No. I have to tell them. It's the only way I can get the team to thwart them. So of the people who are on hold, did you have someone in particular that you were?
I'm very interested in Victor.
Are you?
Victor fascinates me. Yeah, because I cover Christian counseling so much. And so I'm very interested in people who have had demon experiences.
Yeah, so Victor in New Mexico, call screener lists that Victor had a demon inside him for the longest time. He got it out with Jesus. The demon made him lustful, angry, and miserable, even though he had everything in life. Victor, welcome to the Atheist Experience. You are on with Shannon Q and Matt Dolandy. How are you?
Hey, Victor.
I'm hoping.
Victor.
All right. Well, we're going to return Victor to the queue because
demon hung up on Victor.
They might not have suspected that they were going to get picked up that quickly. Earl in New York, if assuming my clicky button is there. Earl in New York has proof of the Nephilim. You are on with Shannon Q and Matt. How are you?
Hey, Earl.
Hello. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. Happy Father's Day to you, Matt.
I'm not a father. I am a mother, or so I've been told many times.
A mother?
mother many times.
Happy Man's Day in general, but you know, yeah. So I believe I have information and possible evidence of Nephilim, aka giants, as written about in the Bible.
Okay, now, what is your evidence?
Now don't get triggered at me, because it does have a lot of like Bible references.
Bible references
and,
don't trigger me.
That's one more time.
Bible references don't trigger me, but I'm interested in if Bible references are also aren't evidence.
Okay, well, I mean, that's sort of confusing to me because, like, in my mind, the way I see it is, you know, if somebody wrote a letter back in the day and has their name, different from the Bible that has, like, no real authors or, you know, editors, you don't know who wrote each book. We only know based on, like, sort of documentaries, conspiracies, theories, so on and so forth.
That's confusing to me. Getting me to where it might be evidence. Are you saying that if something was written down by someone at some point in time, then it must be evidence?
Well, not that it must be, but I'd say it's the closest thing to it in my perspective. But, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. I understand that.
But, fair enough. It'd be a form of evidence, but it's not, I suppose. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Matt.
Well, to get to my evidence, I have actual like photographs that I'm looking at right now of giant skeletons. Like, they're not like human proportions. They look like human skulls and human bones and so on, but based on the text here, based on the information that explains certain things, it says, you know, these are giant bones.
So
I didn't really read everything, but I have it all in front of me, and I can read any part.
I'm gonna interrupt you for 1 second, because I think that we're gonna go down a rabbit trail, and it all might come down to this. It sounds to me like you saw something on the internet that looks like or is presenting you information that's suggesting that these are Nephilim skulls, and you believed it because it confirms something that's in the Bible, and you already want to believe what's in the Bible. So that does. Though that may qualify as some form of evidence, that's certainly not enough evidence to convince anybody that's reasonable. And I'm confused as to why just looking at something that you saw on the internet would be enough evidence to convince you.
I'm also wondering which pictures you're actually looking at, because some of the pictures that have purported to have been skeletons are known exposed hoaxes.
Right.
So absolutely. Without knowing which one you're looking at,
Question, is there by any chance that I could send you this information and you look over it yourself?
Sure. You can send email with links to tv@atheist-community.org, and I'll make sure that I forward it to Shannon.
Yeah.
Okay. One second. Like, can you repeat that again? TV?
tv@atheist-community.org. Or you could Google giant skeleton hoax and see if your picture appears amongst the ones that are known hoaxes.
Yeah. Because if you don't have any other evidence to corroborate what you're looking at, it's disheartening to me that you would believe what you're looking at when there's so much contrary evidence. Like, if that was really valid evidence and not one of these hoaxes that are used to convince impressionable people, then you would see it. It would be prominent. Like, you would see it. It would pervade archaeological and paleontological papers. There'd be papers written on it. So this a question
would
be, I would ask.
This would be National Geographic, Archaeology Today, scholarly professors at university, et cetera. And it wouldn't be just some clickbait photo on the internet, because this would fundamentally change huge things that we understand about our history. And so if these were things were real and the evidence was for them, it wouldn't just be on the conspiracy theorist website or through some Google search.
Well, it's not just some conspiracy theorist website. Sorry to cut you off.
Prove it. Because I have yet to see it on anywhere other than conspiracy theorist websites or websites exposing those conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm.
This is necessarily a conspiracy theory topic. Because if in fact there were good photographic evidence to show that there used to be giants, mm-hmm. then the entire scientific community is conspiring to keep that evidence from coming to light in any responsible fashion. That's why it fits in the conspiracy theorist stuff.
Yeah. And what did you do to validate it also would be my question. Aside from seeing it and being compelled by it just on site, what did you do to confirm the validity of what you were looking at, aside from believing it because it comports with the Bible?
I hadn't done much to really confirm the validity of it, because I don't really know how.
Okay.
It's kind of a problem though, right?
So it's kind of a problem. Basically, you found something on the internet. You didn't do anything to confirm
I didn't necessarily find it. A friend of mine sent it to me.
Okay. A friend of yours sent you something on the internet. You didn't bother to do any research at all. You just called us to do your homework for you.
Kind of, I guess.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, get your input on it.
Well, I can't give you input on something I haven't seen. And while I'm happy to let you email us, it would be nice, and I say this to other people too, I'm not just beating you up. It'd be nice if some of you guys did your own homework just a little bit, like spent 4 or 5 seconds. Because if you have an image, you can do a Google image search and find out where else that's been reported. Maybe you find a news article about it. Because when you send it to me, that's what I'm going to do. And my question is, why should I spend all this time doing work that you could do just so you don't have to?
Yeah, and Earl, before we let you go, I want to say something. I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I think this is an important point, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. You seem like a nice gentleman. This is something that I say all the time on my channel, and it's something I wish people would do more often. It's advocate for your own understanding. People need to understand source methodology significantly better. A lot of us are compelled to believe things that we're exposed to because of confirmation bias or because of crowd conformity. There's a million reasons that we can be compelled and feel justified in believing things that don't actually make sense when you hold them up to scrutiny. So I would encourage you, before you call into another show, before you start to purport this or put it out or spread it around, do some advocating for your own understanding. Figure out how you would verify something like this. Go and find the sources. Do what Matt said and do a Google image search. That, like, what you're doing now is a good step, I suppose, because you're actually seeking out people that are very likely to not believe what you're saying just on face value. But there's a very good reason why, though, right, Earl? It's because we're not able to corroborate or validate what you're saying. It's just you making a claim. Now, this happened to you, I think. What you need to do is learn how to source these things out so that they're not just surprisingly compelling to you and they become a little bit more novel. And that might be a journey towards uncovering more about what you believe and why.
A quick Google search will get you there. Where you want to go first is a place called Snopes, SNOPES.com. Because if you go to Snopes.com, there's a site there that is fact-checked giant human skeleton photographs that has went up January 20th, 2019, covering a number of different photographs showing that this is false, that these are hoaxes. And so you'll be able to peruse through that link on Snopes to see if the pictures that you got were amongst those that were hoaxes.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds like a good start. I just need to, you know, gain some insight on how I could get a start on this. Of course, Google image search and so on. And, you know, I thought I probably would find other photos like this and it wouldn't really deny anything.
Yep. There were a number of like digital art contest sites that ran these and then they were compiled together, some of them as hoaxes. You know, we're looking at, you know, Photoshop, perspective stuff, all kinds of problems. None of it is accepted as a science or anything that is consistent with the known history of the world. But
yeah.
Anyway, look at Earl.
Earl. Thanks, Earl. Go look into it.
All right. Let's see. Should we try? Oh, I think there's a call screener still talking with Victor. So we'll
get
back to that at some point.
Sure.
We got Will in Washington, who's a deist. You're on with Shannon and Matt. How are you?
Hi, Will.
I am absolutely fantastic now that I get to talk to you guys.
Well, if you want to, I can put you back on hold and then take your call again. And then
Hey, Matt, we're both seeing red, bud. Let's chill out. I'm sorry. I'm just feeling some blue and.
I wasn't being a dick. I was saying if I put you back on hold and then take you back hold, we will have made you feel wonderful twice.
I'm sorry. I'll wait as long as it takes, man. You're good at magic, and that's really neat. And I've been waiting so long to talk to you about it.
Okay, doke. Well,
you're a really neat guy. I just want to hang out.
Well, what have you got for us?
Hang on. If that's
what's up, Will? What do you got?
Thank you. I'm with all sincerity. It is an honor to have the floor with you guys. Because Matt, man, I have been back and forth from the cross so many times.
Okay. How can we help? I love doing the show, and lots of people love doing the show. Talking about how awesome you think I am isn't good for the show or me.
Right. Exactly. So the last guy that was on, I think everybody was seeing red there because the guy was saying like there was something significant about that skeleton situation.
Mm-hmm. Right. So
I feel like that's how God is presenting himself to us. It's just through art. And it's just that easy. I'm willing to talk about it and answer questions. I really want questions, please.
So you think the ability to perceive beauty is evidence of God?
Yes, and there's more to that. There is a babbler bird that builds its nest three times to attract the interest of females. And blue is the color that it goes for. I mean, that's evolution. That's from the foundation of a belief should be based in science, as I see it.
Okay.
I don't remotely understand what a babbler bird has to do with this.
Yeah, I'm not pulling it together in my head, Will. It's difficult for me to understand your presentation.
That's all right. I understand. I've been waiting for this a long time, and I don't know how to talk about it. Thank you for your patience.
It's okay.
Well, did you have some point you wanted to get to?
Yeah. But we're getting there together. I want to hear what you guys have to say, too.
Okay, it's not how this works. This is a call-in show where you tell us what you believe and why. And
I'll get right to it. I'll tell you what I believe and why. Are you ready? It's weird.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I need you to calm down because...
Okay, have you guys ever heard of David Haller?
No.
He is an angry boy at the end of time. How does somebody love God if God is not in time? As we understand it.
Okay. Your presentation's a bit disorganized, so I'm finding it difficult to understand what your point is.
That's fair. We disagree on places, and that's the fun.
I'm not even sure if I disagree because your presentation is disorganized. It's difficult for me to get a coherent point.
Yeah, I tell you Will. Why don't we go ahead and let you go, move on to some other callers, and then if you can kind of jot down, maybe send in an email what it is that you're wanting to address, we might be able to help you fine-tune it so that we could get to some point. Because right now, Shannon and I are both stuck.
Yeah.
I will listen the rest of the day. I'm on hold. I'm waiting for you. This is your show, and I want to talk to you. You guys are the bosses. I want this. That's all.
Except I'm not going to leave you on hold.
Please get back to me before the end of the day. If that's what you need to do, Will, I just want to talk to you, Matt. Please. Yeah.
Well, Will, that's not going to happen today. What I'm saying is we're not going to just put
whenever you can. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to drop the
whatever
call.
You need.
You can watch. You can email TV at atheistshavingcommunity.org. That goes to me and everybody else.
Well, no, I don't do that. I don't. We only have right now.
Okay, Matt. Then I guess we're going to lose right now. And you can try and get your thoughts put together in a way we can address it. And you can call another week.
Well, if that doesn't sound like a win-win-win situation in my view.
Well, I'm not interested in a win-win-win situation. I just want to make a decent show. And right now, without something substantive for me and Shannon to talk about, there's nothing else we can do.
What if we talked about what it means to win-win-win-win?
Oh, Will, I need to listen to me for a moment, okay, please, Will? I feel as though your thoughts are a bit disorganized right now. And I think that what would be best at this moment is for you to just kind of take a step away. So we're going to let you go and just take a step away and maybe work a little bit on maybe through writing, organizing your thought process. And once you have the ability to organize that thought process, maybe give a call back in or send it in an email and we can have a dialogue that way once we can get to a few more coherent points. But I think at this point, maybe it's stress, maybe it's tension, but you are having some difficulty organizing your thoughts and that's causing frustration, which makes the conversation difficult. Okay. So I think that it's fair right now that perhaps we just go to the next person. Well, you have that so that you have the opportunity to do that organization. Okay. Well,
can I go back on hold, please? That's a great idea. Thank you.
You're welcome, Will. Thank you very much for calling and good luck with the organizing and coordinating the thoughts. Okay.
Please put me back on.
Okay.
All right.
Goodbye, Will.
I put him back on hold. There we go. Maybe we got the technical issue sorted now with Victor. You're on with Shannon and Matt.
Hi.
How did it? Hi, Matt. Hi, Shannon.
Hello, Victor.
So I've been listening to you guys actually a bit. I actually converted maybe less than a year or so ago, but at the same time, I listened to your show. Like, I was prepared to just turn everything off, but at the same time, you guys are kind of like interesting enough for me to go on, because you know how it goes. You get online, you hear something you don't want to hear, you don't like, you don't disagree with, you might just turn it off, but that's not the case. And I wanted to just tell you a message of my faith, of my come to Jesus moment, I guess.
Okay. So what is your experience that you would like to impart to us that is compelling?
It was a demon inside of me, but I never even considered it a demon because this is actually a reason I wanted to call the show, because I saw in one episode that Matt, I even wrote notes about it, where Matt was talking to some guy in Arizona, and it was about nihilism and all that. But you ultimately said that without Christ, that with Christ, that this is just a place, that life is just something that you do before eternity. And I do agree with that. But you made it seem as though this life is important. And hang on, excuse me. Yeah.
Yeah. What you claim I said doesn't sound like me, so I'm already a little confused.
I made like quick handwritten notes. So let me just read.
Why don't we do this instead, Victor?
Sure.
Instead of trying to rehash what you think I said, which would maybe force me to have to go back and rewatch the show to figure out which one, why don't we just talk today and forget everything about the past? You can tell us about your demon, how you discovered it's a demon, how any of us could know it's a demon, you know, stuff like that. Because what I said in the past isn't really relevant, is it?
Part of it is, but I'm just saying, this life is dirty rags.
I'm literally
Matt,
Victor, I'm literally right here and can tell you what I think right now. So what I said in the past doesn't matter. You can always just ask me what I think right now.
Sure. Thank you. Okay. The Bible and Christ says that this life is dirty rags. You disagree with that. For the longest time, I disagreed with that, but I have lived life to the fullest. I've made a lot of money. I had a lady, I traveled all over the world. I had lots of time, but there was always an empty hole inside of me. But on top of that, there was rage and lust and anger. And I expressed this lust by a lot of girlfriends, but even with a lot of girlfriends, there was always I just needed more and more pornography, even though I tried to do stages without masturbation, but I found out, but this is where the demon comes in, because I actually started reading the Bible. I didn't expect the Bible. I read it because apparently all laws in the United States and in the Western world come originally from the Bible.
No, they don't.
This is what I heard on a podcast. Again,
well,
I'm going
well,
to
stop I'm going with there's a story, but I'm Victor, stop going with just what you hear in a podcast, because in fact, the laws of the United States, the majority, you take the Ten Commandments, the majority of them are contravened by laws, starting with the first one, thou shalt have no other gods before me. The United States actually has religious liberty allowing that. There's no prohibition against lying, although there is one against perjury. The adultery laws are no longer have any teeth and can't be enforced. There's nothing that requires me by law to honor my father and mother. These things, the fact that societies have come up with laws, whether it be, you know, the Ten Commandments or the Jewish law or the Code of Hammurabi or whatever, that these contribute to how societies build themselves is undeniable. But the laws and government in the United States are not based in any way on the Bible or Christianity. But I still want to get to this. So first of all, hang on. You seem to have this notion that sex is bad or masturbation is bad, something that I don't agree with at all, or that, you know, it's too much, or that you have kind of porn addiction or whatever, which I don't think is possible unless you can demonstrate that it's doing something detrimental to your life. But at the end of the day, you blame all this on a demon. And I want to know, what on earth makes you think it's a demon, and how could you prove that to somebody?
And that is where I could go with my experience. As for the law, again, because I want to get to the point, but it's kind of a long story, but it goes like this. On the podcast, I heard an interesting thing about the law. Here's an interesting bit of trivia, not related to what we're talking to. Did you know that in the United States, you are not a citizen of the country, the United States, but a citizen of Washington, D.C.? So I wanted to know more about law. So I got myself to studying law because I had so much time to do so. Then, while studying law, they were kept on being biblical references. I didn't read the Bible before. I was not religious. Then I read the Bible. And then I realized so much of this felt so true, especially Proverbs. Proverbs felt like a punch to the gut, like bam, bam, every other page, every chapter, because every chapter is tiny in the Bible I have. And then. Then I saw Christ, but I still had like this anger and this emptiness. And I'm saying, Christ, if you're there, help me. So more coincidence happened. That podcaster who taught me about the law put his hand on my shoulder, did a prayer, said, you are not allowed in demons anymore. And all this anger and hello.
Yeah, we're still here.
We're here.
I'm trying to interrupt because because first of all, you started off with this thing that I'm not a citizen of the United States, but I'm actually a citizen of Washington, D.C. As far as I know, that is, must be, and is bizarrely not true. I mean, that's just not the case. And this is someone who, like, I did 8 years in the military. I'm a citizen of the United States, and you're telling me that I'm not a citizen of the United States, I'm a citizen of Washington, D.C. But you jump from that to Jesus told you that you're not going to have to deal with demons anymore. I'm just going to let Shannon talk.
Deep breath, Matt. Deep breath. Okay, so Victor, I think I actually have the whole story now. So it seems to me that you had an unfulfilled life, even though you had things that ostensibly should have been fulfilling to you based on what your expectations are, but by societal standards of what should be fulfilling, like being rich and being able to travel, those things should just, you know, we're taught that those things should be fulfilling. When they aren't fulfilling, sometimes it can be surprising. So that would lead to some form of despair potentially and could lead to drug use, which it sounds like you were doing as well. Then you were exposed to this podcast. No, let me finish. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding this before we go down a million tangential rabbit holes. You were exposed to this podcaster. You said something about the law that you found was interesting. You realized that maybe there was some reference to the Bible that might be worth looking into. You looked into the Bible. It resonated with you somehow, but you still weren't entirely fulfilled. This podcaster, somehow you managed to get a relationship, put his hand on your shoulder, cast out these demons. And then at that point, you realized that Jesus had come into your life and the demon was gone now and you felt fulfilled. Is that a pretty succinct summary of your story?
You got it perfectly right. And you're right about the drugs. There was Adderall and steroids, in fact.
Okay. So none of that, and I want you to make sure that you can understand this from the perspective of somebody like me. None of that is evidence that there was a demon in you. I can understand how for you, based on, I don't want to invalidate your individual experience, I can understand how for you, when you put all of those pieces together, the coordination between you reading the Bible and finding this podcaster may have given you a sense of fulfillment. But there's all kinds of pieces that are missing from this, as far as I can tell, Victor. Because how you met this podcaster, the types of things this podcaster is saying, leads me to believe that maybe you have some sort of undue influence, potentially, and that undue influence may be leading you to believe that there's a sense of fulfillment by leaving these things behind, and potentially there isn't. Or you found another purpose in your life, and that purpose being in your life, or that group of people that you've been accepted into, somehow gives you a sense of belonging to a community that was missing from you before. All of those things are reasons, very valid external reasons, why those lustful feelings that you potentially had and that feeling of unfulfillment that you potentially had could have dissipated or been replaced by other feelings. None of those to me are evidence of a demon. If you hadn't been told demons existed by somebody else external of you, you wouldn't have even made or drawn that affiliation. That affiliation seems to have been drawn for you by exposure to the Bible and exposure to this podcaster / preacher who also apparently expels demons from people. So if you're attempting to have a conversation where you're going to compel somebody like me to believe these sorts of things, you're going to need something significantly less circumstantial than that. Because I just, based on this mild interaction that we're having right now, with just a little tiny bit of information regarding the circumstances surrounding your conversion, can see plausible reasons that it's not what you're saying, that would line up with external experience and psychology that, you know, for a multitude of people. So I'm not compelled. Do you understand why I wouldn't be compelled?
I can. And you seem to have finished almost my story in many ways. The only thing though, is that this anger, because a huge driving motivation for me was anger. I hated people and I wanted revenge. So I just, so my money making efforts, my seduction efforts, my time at the gym, that was anger. And now that anger was, it felt like that was expulsed from me through the power of Jesus. So,
it may not necessarily be the power of Jesus, though, Victor. It could be the fact that you found a community. You were throwing your energy into things you thought would make you happy, and they didn't. And continuing to throw your energy into things that you think are supposed to make you happy, that leads to disappointment spirals. And if you're in a consistent disappointment spiral and you have external reinforcement telling you these are the things that are supposed to make you happy, when you finally kind of like drill it down and realize that the things that really do make you happy are individual relationships, for example, and you find an individual relationship, you can then draw the correlation that this relationship that I'm having is because of my exposure to the Bible. And it may well be because of your exposure to the Bible and Christianity that you formed those relationships, but it's the relationships themselves that may have appeased that psychological dissonance. You're drawing the conclusion that it was Jesus entering his spirit into you, when it may just be acceptance, the ability to feel as though you're atoning for things that you're guilty, that you feel guilty for, the realization that you can let go of the spiral of things that were supposed to make you happy that didn't, that led to disappointment. All of those things could culminate into you feeling as though that severe anxiety is abated in you and you're no longer seeking out a source for happiness, because you found that the source for happiness is a simple thing like individual relationships and not consistently seeking to attain things that don't actually have any sort of tangential value to being connected to humanity. Victor?
Before I say anything more, you're good, Shannon. You're good. I know about Matt Dillahunty and some of his history, but I don't think I've seen you on the show.
I've not been here before, so that makes sense.
Are you perchance a psychologist or just very into psychology?
I have a degree in psychology. Yes. But I'm not a psychologist.
You know your stuff. And the sense, but that sense of community that you're saying that I am in agreement with you that there is other human beings in my life. But I felt like I had a community before, but once again, my opinion of people was one of hatred. And if I can say, and one more thing really was that one thing I learned about sin and not sin is that sin isn't just doing something bad or not, or naughty, but it's a going against God's laws. And when you go against God's laws, you are living, you are cursed and you are inviting demons into your body. Into your life.
Hang on.
I think that you're just conflating demons with bad emotions. Yeah. You're just conflating demons with bad emotions. You're just saying when I feel bad emotions, that is a demon. You can, if you remove demon from the equation, if you don't even utilize the word demon anymore, you can have a more coherent and helpful and productive dialogue about how to act and interact in the world and find that kind of happiness. Once you inject demon, you're actually removing a layer of responsibility and culpability from yourself and the other people around you as well for culpability for your own actions and engagement in your life. So if you remove demons from the equation and just say, okay, when I feel bad emotions, I should do some introspective action to find the source of those bad emotions. If the source of those bad emotions is that I'm actively seeking things that are detrimental to me because I think they're supposed to make me happy and they aren't, which sounds like it might be the case in your story, then once you identify that and isolate that, then you can take logical, knowledgeable, productive steps towards actually finding happiness. And it may have worked for you this time, but the problem with things like this is when you say a demon is what inhabits you and is causing this scenario to take place, you are shifting the burden of your own life choices away from you to something else, something that's not tangible. And you're actually at a detriment to yourself and other people if you purport these types of things, because you're preventing, they're thinking that the hands can be laid on them or they can read a book and that obstacle will be removed. And that is not always the case. It may have been the case circumstantially for you in this instance, but when you purport to these sorts of things, what you're saying is that somebody can say a prayer and it'll remove that burden. And what happens when it doesn't? What happens when it inevitably and invariably does not? The damage starts to snowball because what was supposed to remove it from you didn't remove it from you because it can't, because it's not real. What really does remove it from you is if you actually do the hard work and investing and finding out what the issue really, really is. This is a wall that you're putting in front of you because you think it solved a problem. It didn't. You're just making a correlation because of the circumstances.
Part why so many believers are struggling with incredible difficulties and desperately in need of counseling, while the church, in many cases, different varieties of churches, discourage any sort of counseling that isn't directly with the minister of that church, rather than people going out and getting the help they need. The thing that you said just recently, I would argue, is clearly false, because you said that your understanding is that if you are living outside of God's law, then you are guilty and then will be subject to demons. So let me ask you a couple of quick questions. Do you think I'm living outside of God's law?
Of course you are.
Do you think that I'm suffering from demonic possession or interaction?
If you're not suffering, there's demons close to you. And I do believe that, by the way,
is an incredibly dishonest way to engage with this, because the question I'm asking is trying to get to this claim that you have that if you're living outside of God's law, you're giving yourself up to demons. And when I ask if I have, your answer changes to, if you're living outside of God's law, you're either being played by demons or they're close to you. Well, I don't give a shit if they're close to me. I want to know if they're real and if they have any impact on my life. And if it turns out that there's no impact on my life, then your hypothesis about living outside of God's law is clearly wrong, correct?
In my experience, I am feeling that without Christ and Jesus, you are just going to be cursed and it's going to wither away at you.
But your experience, what experience?
But you don't seem to be living like that either.
Victor, what experience do you have with my life?
The experience I have is just that you seem like a well-adjusted man, and I'm wondering if there's any other curses in your life, because I'm just wondering whether are we just more and more cursed, because I was cursed in spite of all the good things.
What is a curse, Victor, and how could you ever demonstrate that a curse is in place?
Just that much like me, the feelings, just no mercy, no sense of mercy, righteousness, and constant anger, anxiety, and lust overcoming me, overpowering me.
So for you, it seems that curse is seemingly synonymous with bad things happen and a sense of hopelessness.
And an emptiness in my whole. That's correct.
An emptiness in your whole. Okay. But curse, so it's possible for someone to feel emptiness when they're not cursed.
No, because if you follow God's laws, you will.
No. How do you know that? So if somebody doesn't feel empty, it's impossible for somebody to feel empty when they're not cursed, is what you're saying. How do you know that?
It just goes back to Proverbs and
I don't care about Proverbs. I want evidence, not what Proverbs said, and not what you think you've injected into or pulled out of Proverbs. I want actual evidence, right? Because what you call a curse by Proverbs, a Muslim might call a jinn from Allah. Uh-huh. That it essentially is giving you over. The Bible talks about giving you over to reprobate mind. Other religions will say that evil spirits and genies. Others will say that it's fate or karma, that you did something in your past life that is why this life here is so messed up. With multiple different candidate explanations for why there's hopelessness or struggling in your life, how did you determine that the answer you've come up with is the right one? How did you rule out the notion that in a past life you were just shitty?
Because I've read those books before. I had the Tao Te Ching, I had the Bhagavad Gita, and I had the Dhammapada and other Buddhist texts, hoping that maybe a little bit of their answers might. But instead, I just realized that just invited demons. So I chucked those into the garbage.
By going to
Jesus.
What you've done, Victor, is not made anything remotely approaching a reasonable, sound argument, but just an assertion that you've read a bunch of stuff and this is the one you've decided is true. And that's not going to be convincing for me.
Fine. It might not be convincing, but it was like one experience that led me. And it was, and I could tell you the date and time it happened.
Okay. I believe that it really happened, and I can tell you, I believe that it happened at that date and that time, but I also believe that there is a strong chance that you are assigning a value to this experience that is a misattribution. So this is just a correlational effect. It could potentially just be a correlational effect. You just so happened to be at a point where you were seeking certain aspects of your life. Maybe you were ready, whatever. It could have been, you could have inserted another book where the Bible was potentially and come to some of the same revelations, but attribute it to that book that you were reading. And one of the reasons that I think that you are doing this misattribution is because when you're asked for evidence, when you're asked for, okay, well, how do you know it's this and not that? You say, well, I read it. What I hear is, well, I read it in this book. And this is the book that I read that seems to have appealed to me somehow. And it coordinated time-wise with what happened to me, what felt like the cessation of this depression. Now, go ahead, man. No, go ahead. I'm pretty much finished.
We should probably wrap up and move on to some other callers, because that'll give Victor some time to think about what you've said and reformulate stuff. And you can always come back if you have a better case for it. But I'm hoping that you understand why. If somebody tells me, things have felt bad and hopeless, and I became convinced that it's a curse, but I have no evidence other than I became convinced it's a curse, hopefully you can understand why that isn't convincing to me, to the point where you should realize, hopefully, why it shouldn't be convincing to you. Like, we should believe things for a good reason. And if the reason's not compelling enough for someone else to become convinced of it, then maybe we've made a mistake in becoming convinced ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And it could potentially be damaging.
Yeah. Sounds fair enough.
Thanks,
Victor. Sounds fair enough. I don't know what else to say.
Yep. Thanks for chatting, Victor.
Thanks for the call. As a reminder, we would be at the building, and any atheist or atheist friendly person that happens to be in the Austin area would get to come down to the Free Thought Library, and we would have a dinner after the show and meet, greet, and all that stuff. That stuff isn't happening. However, it's worth reminding people about the ACA Discord. If you feel that you're in need of conversation and there's somebody that you'd like to interact with, there are a bunch of people actively on the ACA Discord, as well as a number of other resources around that don't even include the ACA. So you can reach out to Recovering From Religion, recoveringfromreligion.org, et cetera, if you're having doubts or questions. And if you need the advice of someone trained in psychology and you don't have Shannon's personal cell phone number, you can also reach out to their therapist project, and they will put you in touch with someone who will offer you science-based, you know, real working counseling without appealing to gods or the supernatural at all. Let's go to Ivan in Russia. I don't recall the last time we've gotten a call from Russia. So
Russia.
Ivan's calling in to tell us about God is love. So how are you, Ivan? You're on with Shannon and Matt.
Neat.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Shannon. Thank
you Ivan.
Very much for letting me in.
No problem.
Yeah, that's Russia meddling again.
Yeah. This isn't meddling. Yeah. We willingly accepted your call. So
control us as eyes open.
That's great. Yeah, I've listened to your show before. I've listened to your show when you invited Ray Comfort to talk to. And I was trying to understand.
To Ray in a week.
Because I'm a Christian believer. You guys are not, obviously. Mm-hmm. And we're on the different ends of this barricade, so to say. Not to mention I'm actually in Russia. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to understand why you're making this show and why you're talking about all these things and all the scientific background and what God, whom I believe in, put on my heart to do is to call you and tell you one simple thing that...
Oh, can God I pause? You can we pause much. For a second?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so you think that God wanted you to call into this program and give us a message?
Yes.
Okay, did God tell you this in some explicit way, or is this just a feeling that you had in general?
This is a feeling in my heart.
Okay. Did you pray and ask God whether or not your feeling is right and that you should in fact do this?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Okay. What's the message?
The message is very simple. God loves you, Matt. Loves you very, very, very much.
That's
you
the
may
whole
not
message? The whole message?
You may not... Well, I've called to talk about what love is, and when I've been asked what I'm going to talk about, I told...
No, I'm asking, was that the whole message from God, was that he loves me?
Basically, yes, it is.
Okay. Why would God send me a message that there's no way to prove that this message came from God or that the message is true? Why would God send me a message through somebody else to tell me something he could tell me himself?
I will try to explain. When I started to watch your current show right now, that's something I liked very much, by the way. You have all this code in the background, blue background with PHP code. And I'm a programmer. I love code. And actually, I happen to be a PHP programmer, web programmer. And I'm extremely logical person, if you look at me. Logic is everything that I am. I love putting everything into categories, categorizing everything and finding a reason for everything. So in answering your question, why choosing me, somebody without a proof, to come to you, the only thing that proved to me that God is real is not logic, is not science, is not history or any kind of basic background or whatever. It was love. love that I saw in Christian believers.
How can love prove God? I have no problem with the notion that love is real. What I have a problem with is the notion that love somehow proves God. And if the only thing that convinced you was love, then how is it that you became convinced that God wanted you to deliver a message? Because love is not an agent. Love can't say, hey, I want you to give this message.
Well, love is something that's very rare to meet in this world if you look at this. Because real love is a sacrifice. Real love is somebody. Well, people can love you because you're adorable or you're rich or you're attractive. But what I'm talking about is love that is for nothing, for free. It's not because you are a good person, not because you love back. It's just because this kind of love.
Yeah, but that still doesn't point to a God at all.
Yeah, I'm having difficulty here, Ivan, because it seems to me, if I'm rolling back to what you initially said when Matt started asking you questions as to why choose you, it seems as though you're saying that God chose you because you're logical. So potentially because you're logical, you would be the best person to deliver this message to Matt. To God apparently doesn't love me, but that's fine. That's fine. But so you would be the best person to deliver this message to Matt because you're logical. So perhaps he would identify in you that there's, that you're logical and thus it makes sense. That's where I get caught up, because you can't jump from I'm logical, so I found the logic in this, but also love isn't logical, it's a feeling. Because you're going back and forth. You're saying God potentially chose me, utilizing my agency to deliver you this message because I'm logical. And when Matt says, what's the logical mechanism via which God delivered this message to you? You said, well, I really don't know. It's kind of just a feeling. And I didn't use logic to get here. However, I'm going to tell you that we're going to use logic to get there. Really, it just seems like you had a feeling that it means something to you. So you called in, you recognize the fact that we can't feel your feelings. So obviously they're not going to be compelling to us as they are to you. So then we're referencing logic, but we can't bridge that gap because it's not able to be bridged.
Shannon, I understand what you're tackling me. You told me about logic and reasoning, but what I'm trying to tell is this: love is the biggest power in this world. It's much more powerful than logic. And when you see when somebody is sacrificing something for you because he loves you, not because he wants something from you, not Ivan, because he thinks like, yeah.
Ivan, saying, so first of all, what you're just doing is just making assertions. You're not backing up any of these claims. This is what Shannon was trying to say. You think God wants you to give me this message because you're logical, but your message is logic doesn't even enter into this, that it's all about love. It's not logical, and it's about sacrifice. Well, first of all, I don't believe that love is the most powerful thing. I don't believe that love is in any way demonstration of a God. I don't believe that love necessarily always requires sacrifice. And I have zero evidence that any God has ever sacrificed anything for me or loved me.
Yeah. And you're also never going to be able to share an emotional experience. You can try to describe it all you want. You can say, when somebody sacrifices to you, it feels like this. And most of those emotions are relatable, right? Like I can relate to the emotion of love. Matt can relate to the emotion of love. We can relate to the feeling that we get when somebody sacrifices for somebody else. Like we can all, for the most part, relate on some level to what those emotions feel like. But what we can't do, and what people I think get wrong when they attempt to use emotional arguments to prove something like a deity to somebody like me, is what we can't do is we can't feel what you're feeling. You can't impart that. It's impossible. It can't be done, which is why you need to defer back to something that proves it. And the problem is that nothing proves it. No one will admit it. No one will say it out loud. They'll refer to the I had a feeling, I had an experience, that there's this conglomeration of evidence that somehow as an aggregate makes sense to me, even though I can't find any individual evidence. So it'll come back to an emotional argument and it'll never work. It just can't. It can't. I can't feel what you feel. I can understand what a feeling might be like, but I'm not ever going to experience that feeling because it hasn't happened to me. And if God wanted it to happen to me, why aren't I feeling it?
Well, this whole thing about love and sacrifice, when I say that I don't have any evidence that any God's ever sacrificed anything for me, the mere fact that somebody did sacrifice something for me doesn't mean I owe them something. So we're in a big situation where
it doesn't mean that. Shannon told something interesting, if you allow me. The kind of love I told about agape is not feeling, it's not a feeling, it's an action. The sacrifice itself, it's an action. When we sacrifice something and something that we do, not that we feel.
It still doesn't get to evidence, though, for me. You're saying that somebody can do an action and that action is evidence of God, but you're like, you're going from A to Z without any of the alphabet in the middle there for me. Like, a sacrifice could be motivated by any number of things. You're attributing a value to it and then saying that that attribution that I've just purported is evidence of God, when really you're just saying people will sacrifice.
You know, you called in.
I can try to make a comparison.
Mm-hmm. So you called in essentially setting this up as how logical you are. And I would argue that anybody with any understanding of logical argument, going back and listening to this call so far, you have a bunch of assertions, a bunch of non sequiturs, a bunch of, kind of redefinite, nothing that approaches a logical argument.
Okay. There is one logical argument. My little daughter, she is 9 years old. She asked me this question. And the question is, how could God love me if he's going to judge me? He's going to be the judge, right? Sending people to hell.
There is literally no answer to that question that in any way is a logical argument for God. That is a hypothetical question. How could God love me if he's going to judge me?
Yes.
There is no answer to that question. There is no answer to that question that could ever be a logical argument for the existence of God.
Well, there is a logical explanation of that, the only one that exists. How could that be possible? I can tell you if you're interested, and it's very logical. I wouldn't say you that it proves that God is real and he exists, but the answer for the question is very, very, very sophisticated and very simple at the same time, and it's extremely logical.
I'm waiting with bated breath.
I wish you'd fucking...
What is it?
Please give us this monumentally logical thing which doesn't prove God exists, but answers how God could love me even if he's going to judge me.
Okay.
Because first of all, unlike your 9-year-old daughter, I'm not remotely confused about how a God could love me and judge me. I don't have any confusion about how I could love someone and judge their actions. That to me is not even... Of course, it's like a yes, you can love someone and judge their actions, but by all means, give me the answer that is so logical and so profound that it doesn't prove God.
Okay, thank you. So I gave you an example of something that really happened in US. A lady broke the law. She was riding a car. She was driving the car. Sorry. She was driving the car and she broke the law, bad way. And there were people who saw it, witnesses of what she did. So she was brought up to the court, and in US it's done much faster than in Russia, by the way. And the judge came out and he said, you have a choice, either $500 of fine or like 2 weeks of enforced labor. I think that's how it's called in US. And she chose $500, and the judge judged her for $500. And then he took off his whatever clothes judges wear there, and he went out there where they pay the money, and he paid for her because it was her father.
What?
And this is the only way how he could be a loving father and a true judge at the same time. There's
but
no.
That doesn't
other
even
way
make sense, though, because God does send people to hell.
I don't believe this story. I don't believe this story. This story is so close to a Glurge preacher story that it's supposed to be analogous of God's supposed sacrifice of Jesus. This is so close to that I don't believe this story has ever fucking happened. And Jesus did not sacrifice anything. First of all, there's no reason to think that he exists or existed, but Jesus didn't do anything but give up a weekend and then continue to be God. That's not a sacrifice. If somebody throws you overboard, if somebody throws you overboard out of a boat and says they will either throw you an anvil or throw you a life ring if you will pledge yourself to them forever, that's not a sacrifice. That's a manipulative piece of shit.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even fully analogous because he paid the fine. Like, but God is still sending people to hell. God still is sending people to hell. Like, for that story to make sense, like, she would have to go in front of the judge and the judge would have to say, did you do it? And if she said yes or whatever, in this story, the judge would have to know also, would have to have ultimate knowledge of whether she did or didn't do it. And then would have to send her to work labor and not even give her a choice. Because,
if she would say, you know, Father, I don't care. I don't need your help. I'll do it myself. That's exactly what we do if we refuse his love.
Your analogy doesn't make sense, though, either.
Your analogy doesn't.
And it certainly doesn't prove God.
He understands logic. You have now presented an argument that has nothing to do with the existence of God, that in no way demonstrates it, which is actually about a problem that your nine-year-old had, which neither Shannon nor I had any confusion about, which was answered by some sort of analogy of God being the judge, but also the one paying the fine. Well, guess what? Under the model of Christianity, did God create the universe?
Well, according to the Bible and what I believe in, yes, absolutely.
Okay, do you think that God could have created a different universe where things turned out differently?
I don't know what would have happened if, but I know what will happen, Aslan told us once.
Did God know what would happen in this universe, everything?
Matt, I have no clue.
Well, all right, and if you, I don't know what to tell you then.
Ivan, I think God steered you wrong.
One question to you. Matt,
when God told you to call and tell Matt that you love him, I think he may have steered you wrong.
If your God, Ivan, told you to call in to do this, your God is punking you because he made sure that you look worse and he looks worse.
Yeah, God's made a mistake. Or he didn't send you a message.
May I please? There's something you told. I have a question about it.
Okay.
You told that hypothetically, if Jesus was real and he sacrificed his life, that was a kind of a vacation for him. It wasn't necessarily a sacrifice. Why do you think so?
Because he started off as God, right?
Yes.
And he ended up as God, right?
Yes.
Well, there was no sacrifice. He gave up he had a bad weekend.
So when he died and he was crucified, it was pretty painful. It was
Ivan, did he stop being God when he died? When his physical form ceased to exist? Did he stop being God then? Did he stop being God?
You could put me through every pain that Jesus went through if it guaranteed that there would be no more suffering or starvation in the world, and you wouldn't even have to resurrect me. Don't pretend like someone starting off as God, who set all the rules, who could forgive people for those rules, who comes down to satisfy some disgusting bloodthirst, blood magic ritual, and gets a perverse, let's torture you for a weekend in order to substitute for people's sins, which doesn't even make sense. It's bullshit blood magic. Who then gets to go on and be God, I'll take that deal every fucking day. There is no sacrifice there.
Yeah, and you would have to suspend. Well, man, you would have to relinquish him. Ivan, 1 second. You would have to relinquish him being God for even those 3 days too, right? You would have to say he stopped existing.
Yeah.
There's a serious issue there from a theological perspective, as an internal critique. For you to say that, you would have to admit that at some point in time, God stopped existing. When Jesus died, he would have had to have been the embodiment of God, and God stopped existing. If he's also God and the Spirit simultaneously, if you're a Trinitarian, he never ceased existing. He's always existed, and he's never going to stop existing. So what happened, Matt is right, is that corporally, if you buy into it as an internal critique, he had some pain temporarily, and if he lives for eternity, and has always existed for time immemorial, That is a drop of the pan, and Matt would sacrifice himself and end suffering. This didn't even end suffering. It changed nothing whatsoever, except some people believe that they can get forgiven for doing shitty things and live forever.
Because I had the same opinion before, that it wasn't really so hard for a God, if he's God, right, to die on the cross and resurrect.
Shouldn't
it?
Be.
What's so hard about it, right?
Nothing hard about it.
That's what I was thinking before.
So you used to think correctly. What changed your mind?
Surgery without... Before I had a surgery without anesthesia, and
before
after
you
this
had
moment,
surgery without anesthesia, you used to think like I did. Then you had surgery without anesthesia, and that changed your mind.
Yes, I know for sure now that I will not withstand torturing. Neither I think anybody will, because before you experience
Ivan,
it's not
Ivan,
possible.
Ivan, Ivan, are you still Ivan? Are you still in pain now?
No, I'm still Ivan.
Would you do that again? Would you go back and have surgery again without anesthesia if it guaranteed that your daughter never suffered a day in her life? Would you go back and do that again?
Matt, this is exactly why I told you you're much more courageous than me.
Yeah, I am.
I would be.
I would do it for something who I wouldn't know, and you won't admit that you would do it for your daughter.
And also, Jesus didn't have an option. You're saying if it's optional, I would avoid torture in the story. He didn't have an option. There, it was unavoidable. Your daughter
needed a kidney, and you were the only match.
Yeah,
and needed it today, you had to do the surgery without anesthesia. Would you do it?
I want to answer your question about my daughter. Sorry, a hypothetical question. Hopefully, never happens. So the answer is, we have a saying in Russia that a real friend, a true friend, is only shown in the trouble. So I can tell whatever I want now, but when this happens, this what I will do is show who I am. So I really hope I would do that. I would do what Jesus did.
I do
but
too.
What I think, what I do, I would just run away as far as possible and as fast as possible, because I know what the pain is.
Yeah.
This pain is much worse.
Unfortunately, all of this breaks down because despite the fact that you think you're too cowardly to do it, do you think God is too cowardly?
I think what he did was the biggest courage I can imagine, because knowing what is going to be
would be to just fucking forgive people. It is stupid and immoral for a God to hold people responsible for sins of other people, B, to require a blood sacrifice for atonement, C, to come down and take bodily form to serve as a loophole for rules that he's fucking in charge of when he could just forgive everybody and make them jump through hoops and believe the unbelievable, and then pretend that the almighty, all-powerful God of the universe, partially taking human form for a few years in order to have one shitty weekend and then continue to be God, is in any way a sacrifice. That none of that is reasonable for someone who prides themselves on their logic. Everything about this call, you have sacrificed logic and thrown it out the window.
Okay, then I have a question to you.
No, you don't have any more questions, because we're moving on to other callers. We've given you more than enough time.
All right. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Ivan.
I was going to have you check your Facebook Messenger real quick, but
I also
wanted you to know if you had someone in particular that you wanted to go to next, because... You know.
Oh, I have no preference, but I should open my Facebook Messenger I promised I would, and then didn't.
Because we have a caller from Nova Scotia named Joseph from Nova Scotia. You are on with Shannon Q.
Oh my gosh. I bet you I know who this is.
How you doing, Shannon? How you doing, Matt Dillahunty?
Hi, Joseph. How are you?
I'm having a rough day, but I'm going to let Shannon.
Shannon, how are you? You enjoying this weather out here today? It's pretty good.
Better than yesterday. Yesterday was horrifying. Horrifying.
Yeah, yesterday disgusted me. Yesterday, I felt like I was turning into like a shriveled up grape. What's that called? It's called a raisin.
Joseph, a raisin. You were turning into a raisin. Exactly. What would you like to talk about, bud? Exactly.
Yeah. Are you both materialists? This is like a quick little question, I guess. I'm just curious to know what both of you would think about this. Are you both materialists?
Philosophically, no.
No,
I'm a methodological naturalist, not a philosophical naturalist or philosophical materialist. I would not go to the extent of asserting that the material world is all that exists. It's just all that I'm aware of.
Okay. So you wouldn't require like a materialistic like explanation for God's existence then?
No, materialistic explanations are all that I can accept until somebody demonstrates a non-material explanation and shows that it is in fact viable and correct. I don't know how anybody would do that. It, as far as I can tell, has never been done. So I'm not requiring a materialistic explanation for God. I'm requiring a sound explanation for God. And I don't think that there are any sound explanations that appeal to the supernatural.
Okay, so it just has to be like a good argument, basically, more so than like being able to like empirically or like epistemologically like demonstrate it, or?
No, it needs to be epistemologically sound. And there needs to be some demonstration. You can't just come up with an abstract, you know, convoluted argument. There needs to be some evidence, because would you agree that either some God exists or no gods exist?
Yeah, or you cannot know, of course, which is where
No. Why is it that I can ask a simple, straightforward question, which you should agree with, and you seem to, and then you went on to something that's completely irrelevant? I said, I said that either some gods exist or no God exists, and you wanted to add whether or not we know about it. That's irrelevant. Either I've got...
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Stop interrupting. Either I've got $50 in my wallet or I don't. Whether you know about it or not is irrelevant.
I think he was thinking about belief positions.
So either some gods exist or no gods exist, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Now, if no gods exist, we're done, correct? We don't need to spend any more time on this. If we were, I mean, obviously we'd have to find a way to demonstrate that. But if no gods exist, then any arguments for gods must be fallacious, even if we don't know.
Sorry, could you repeat that, please?
If no God exists, then any argument for a God must be fallacious, even though we are not necessarily aware of that.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. I mean, if God doesn't exist, then you wouldn't be able to argue that God exists in a way that wouldn't be fallacious. Yeah.
Sure. So we must be talking, in order to have any sort of discussion about this, we must be talking about the proposition that some God exists. Now, if some God exists, but that God is completely impervious to detection in the material world at all, like there's no way this God does not interact with the material world, there's nothing detectable within the material world about it, that God's existence and non-existence, there is no way to distinguish between those two cases for us, correct?
I don't know.
Wow. That's literally the easy question, because what I'm saying is, case A, a God exists and does not interact in the material world in any detectable way, and case B, there is no God, are fundamentally identical from our perspective. A God that doesn't exist is indistinguishable from the God that does not interact with reality.
Is it possible that it could be demonstrated through actions, like in the same way that morality would also be like an immaterial concept?
No, I'm saying that if there has to be, for anything beyond the material world, if it does not manifest in the material world in some way, its existence is indistinguishable from its non-existence.
Okay, yeah. But if something could be demonstrated through, say, actions, which you could observe, like, say, morality, which would be another immaterial concept.
Morality isn't an action.
God could be demonstrated. Well,
morality isn't an action.
It's what motivates actions.
No,
lots
of things motivate action.
Morality is a concept.
What motivates actions more often is desire, but morality is not an action. And so if you're going to present arguments supported by evidence, you would need to present that evidence. Otherwise, you're just claiming a God exists and it's not detectable.
So is desire then a material concept? I'm a little confused.
Desire is an abstraction that is a product of our minds.
Like morality?
No, because one of them is one we experience and the other one is a judgment. Desire is something we experience.
Morality.
I'm going to shut up and let Shannon do it because I can't get a sentence out without you interrupting me. So go ahead, Shannon.
Hi, Joseph.
I'm so sorry.
Hello. It's okay. Hi. So I don't feel, I'm not getting where you're putting these two together. So we don't have an experience of morality. Like I'm not feeling moral right now. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure where you're getting to there. I mean, I would like to have, I'm a little weird on the morality thing though. I think you know this already. I think that all morality is essentially just kind of like a made up conceptual. I don't think tangible.
Yeah, I know that. And so if I do seem like I'm interrupting, by the way, I am very sorry because the audio on my end is kind of bad and it's kind of low and I can't really turn it up very more. So it's possible that I might actually be talking and you guys are talking at the same time, but
it's okay.
I don't actually realize it. So I am very sorry if I am interrupting.
We're Canadians. We apologize. That's what we do. Nova Scotians especially, but we're good. So Joseph, nobody's gonna understand what we're saying now. We'll just go back and forth going, yeah, bud, yeah, hear you, bye. What? Yeah,
exactly. We're speaking alien language, yeah.
Right. So I to get to Matt's point though, I think, is like you can't if it's not detectable anywhere, you saying you can see it through actions just seems again to me like attribution. Like I don't understand how you can get to proof of God through the way people act unless unless you're doing it would seem like a series of mental gymnastic leaps would need to happen for me to get people act this way, thus God. Like you would have to do some serious work to get me there. But and God, do you think that God is detectable somehow? That this might be a better question, Joseph. Is God detectable?
I'm not really sure, because I'd have to know like how we're defining detectable, but I really want to make something clear. Like, I didn't really come in here like expecting to argue for the existence of God. I was more so just curious about
What were you curious about?
You're an atheist, and I'm interested in hearing you talk about like theism and stuff.
Should just hang up and listen to the other calls, because this show is about interacting with people, telling us what they believe and having discussions about it. If you didn't call in to defend what you believe, then just listen to other people do it, because that's what the show's about. I'm not interested. I'm not interested in somebody who just, oh, please tell me more about atheism. Go Google. It's really simple.
No.
Atheists are people who are not convinced that a God exists, period. Done. That's it.
Yeah, no, I understand what an atheist is. Yeah. I was just interested in hearing like alternative arguments, because like when I come in, like I've been wrestling with my sort of religious ideas for a very long time, and I think I am leaning like very, very strongly in the direction of theism for sure. And when I talk to a lot of more like, I guess, like you could say anti-theists, I guess, a lot of them sort of like just sort of expected this. They want like a materialistic explanation for God's existence. And so I was mostly just curious about what you thought about that. And I think I pretty much know. So I guess that we can, I guess that we're good and we can get on to other callers, I guess.
Sociable, bud. Sociable.
All right. Yeah, have a good one, guys.
Enjoy the weather.
Thanks.
Have a good night, Joseph.
Yeah. So we're like 8 minutes from 6 o'clock, and I don't know. The crew is asking if we wanted to go past six, but I know that you've got another thing to do. So
I do have another thing.
We need to stop like right at six, which means there's like 8 minutes left, and I will let you pick the last caller.
And then
we'll have the screeners politely and nicely let all the rest of them down gently.
Let's talk to Cy. Let's talk to Cygard. Let's talk to Cy.
Oh my God. I thought it was Cy, the other Cy.
No, God. We like, both talked to him though, too.
Why the fuck would you do that to me? Like,
we do the show today. Actually, I would do that to you.
I know.
There's 100% chance I would do that to you. Right. Hi, Cy. How you doing?
Okay. I'm here because you put out a... What's that?
I said, how you doing? You're here. Why? Oh. Some atheist views aren't scientifically valid. Dun, dun, dun. You want to talk about DNA being a code.
That's not an atheist view. Atheist view is... The only atheist view is we're not convinced there's a God. Everything else is something else. So what atheist view, since there's only one atheist view, and that is I'm not convinced there's a God, how is that unscientific?
I'm not talking about atheist views. There are a couple of, I guess you could call them memes or ideas that are floating around that are pseudoscientific that I see in atheist tweets and atheist, not necessarily yours.
Did you see them from me or Shannon?
You want me to leave? I mean,
I would like you to answer the question. Did you see them from me or Shannon?
Did I see what? Sorry.
The things that you're complaining about that you find, I think what Cy is trying to get to is that he sees some atheists kind of like putting out pseudoscientific stuff and it can be popular. And what do we think about that? And I don't think that you would say that either Matt or I do put that stuff out. And Cy, you know me, and I'm pretty sure you follow Matt.
Right.
But so right. Are you just kind of asking us what we think about it?
No. It would be interesting to hear what you think, but I'm more interested in the fact that both of you are very strong influencers in the atheist community. And I think it would be very useful.
All right, give me one.
For either one or both of you to use your influence to explain to people why these are not good ideas to be promulgated.
Give us one example. Just one.
Okay. So I've seen a meme recently, many times, that says God equals the square root of -1. I don't know if you've seen that. It's on T-shirts. It's very popular online. And I think the idea is that the square root of -1 is defined as an imaginary number. So when you write that God is equal to the square root of -1 or I, you're saying that God is imaginary.
Yes.
Right.
But there's a big problem with, okay?
So I agree. Can we just stop? Can we just stop, Cy? I have a T-shirt that says God is imaginary. I almost never wear it because when I wear it, I realize that I'm now asserting a positive claim that I cannot actually demonstrate. Is that your point? Yeah.
Not quite. It's a little stronger than that.
Oh, by all means, make it stronger.
Yeah. It's much stronger. Because the fact is that the word imaginary in math, the square root of minus one is not the same as the word imaginary in normal usage.
Yes.
And
yes,
in fact,
yes. I'm sorry. No, stop. Stop.
Okay.
You're not making it stronger. You're not making it stronger, Cy. You are just being fucking pedantic. It's a joke. I have a shirt that says God is imaginary. What it says is God is just pretend. And I almost never wear it because, A, I don't want people who are mildly more pedantic than me to be saying, oh, you've now asserted a claim that you can't demonstrate. Because technically they're right. I can't prove to you that God is just pretend. But now you want to go a step further, that if you say God is imaginary and you use square root of negative one, now you've made a math error too. Well, nobody gives a fuck, Cy. Nobody on the fucking planet other than you needs this double-layered pedantic correction to a shitty little meme. First of all, I don't like memes in general anyway if they're trying to convey an actual message. Funny memes, cute memes, cool. But if they're trying to convey a message, I prefer something other than the McNuggets of thought. And I'm certainly not going to sit around and obsess over. But by and large, if I had a shirt that said, fairies are just pretend, nobody would say anything about it. Or fairies are square root of negative one, nobody would say anything about it. And the fact of the matter is, in colloquial conversation, there's as much or more evidence for fairies as there is for God. And what somebody's actually expressing when understood correctly is that, hey, I'm surrounded by a whole bunch of people who have this wild, imaginary, supernatural friend, as far as I can tell. And it's strange to live in this world where I'm the only one that makes sense. I would like very much for other people who can understand the square root of negative one, because those are the smarter people or the more knowledgeable people, supposedly, to let me know who they are so that maybe I don't feel like I'm the only person in this room that is going, what the fuck is going on around here? That's what this is about. I'm happy to tell people that they've made a terrible meme or that they've wrongly asserted a burden of proof they can't defend. But I can't believe as a last call for Shannon's first show, we got to a double pedantic thing about a math error.
You still there, Cy?
No, he's gone. He hung up.
Good. Oh, okay.
I did not hang up on Cy.
I don't think you hung up on anybody today.
Cy hung up. I hung up on one person, but
there you go.
Yeah, the rest of them, everybody else already handled. All right. So
for the record, though, I don't like some of those memes. Like, but it's difficult to police. Like, I understand what Cy's saying. Like, you can use your influence, but we're not perpetuating them. Like, you wouldn't see me retweeting them or going, good job, that's hilarious. And on the contrary, I've actually on many occasions approached people, especially when people purport memes about religion being a mental disorder. I have disdain for them.
There was
for a multitude of reasons.
There was somebody before the show who was obviously a troll, so much so they called in twice. They called in with the fake name Lucifer to say that atheism is mental illness and that I'm awful and an asshole and wrong. And we were just like, we're not going to take that call. I kind of wish we would have, because you and I are completely on the same page, being absolutely livid every time somebody comes up and tries to do this. Religion is just mental illness. No. First of all, it's not in the DSM. Second of all, while mental illness may go along with some religious beliefs, that doesn't make the beliefs themselves or the normative usage of those beliefs mental illness. Second of all, I was a fundamentalist Christian for a number of years. Mental illness isn't something you can just cure by thinking about it and changing your mind.
And more, even as much importantly, it's not a pejorative. It's not a pejorative to bandy about in order to make people feel as though you are somehow intellectually superior and anybody who doesn't think like you is inferior and defective, which is the way that it's utilized. And it's not to be wielded as a weapon, because all that does is damage people who have legitimate mental health disorders and cause people who are on the brink of trying to figure out whether or not they do to be more closeted, because it helps perpetuate stigmatization that is damaging. And if you are a humanist by any metric that you see valuable, you stop it now.
Yeah. And so I will leave Shannon's thoughts here as the last official words for the show as we close.
Thank you.
I really wish you would have checked your Facebook Messenger and answered before the show was over.
I was listening to people, Matt.
I understand, God. But we're also on a timetable here.
I'll come back.
So I'm happy to announce that Shannon, who's just fucking awesome, has agreed to be a regular member of the co-host rotation, particularly during the quarantine area. And while that still might mean you only get to see her every month and a half or 2 months because there's so many of us doing it, hooray, because everybody works at, including me. Welcome to the Atheist Experience as an official, regular, although not every week, co-host.
That's really exciting. Hopefully your audience, hopefully I didn't disappoint them too much with my Canadian-ness, getting Canadian all over their screens. But yeah, this is exciting. This was really fun. It was very interesting. Our communication styles, I think, complement each other to a certain degree. We're essentially like the epitome of good cop, bad cop, you and I, Matt. Yeah,
you keep me measured, at least until it's worth it to explode.
And you stop me from just listening until all I'm doing is listening to people.
So on that note,
we'll be good together.
I want a couple quick things. We have raised more than the $3,000 goal in donations today. Thank you to everybody who made those donations. They're all completely tax-free. It goes to help the ACA. I look forward to the day when we are all back in the building and everybody is safe, and to get Shannon down here to actually sit in the building to do the show live alongside me, or Jenna or Jim or any of the other people who involved in the show, but especially me. We have our crew who, please put the crew up so that everybody can see. Woo! Those are the people who are working to make sure this show happens. We greatly appreciate and love all of them for doing that. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you so much for doing this, Shannon, and for agreeing to do it with us more often. You go do your other show stuff because everybody wants you on there, and I will see you guys next week.
I'll see you whenever I'm back.